Follow Mooney Goes Wild on Twitter
at NatureRTE.
On RTE Radio 1, another chance to hear a special Mooney Goes Wild programme on the Bergen Whale.
Roger.
Viewed from space, the Earth looks like a blue marble.
And we're getting a picture on the TV.
Its oceans are far and away its defining visual characteristic. They make up 71% of its surface and contain 97% of its water. We are the ocean planet. Life as we know it first sprang into being there, and they teem with life still. Our oceans are home to the largest animals that have ever lived. These are whales. Mammals whose ancestors originally left the seas, lived on land for millions of years, walking on four legs, then eventually returned to the deep. There, their front legs gradually evolved into flippers, while their hind legs disappeared, and they instead grew to rely on their large tails for propulsion. Many different and diverse species evolved, and some grew to truly gargantuan proportions, larger than any land animal could ever conceivably be. Some whale species favor surface waters, while others dive to extraordinary depths. The deepest diver of all is Cuvier's beaked whale.
...500 meters. ...1,000 meters. ...1,500 meters. ...2,000 meters. The Cuvier's beaked whale dives so deeply that it is rarely ever seen alive by humans, except when the occasional individual beaches itself. One of the most recent live strandings of this near-mythical creature occurred in February 2017 on the island of Sotra, close to the city of Bergen, which sits on the southwestern coast of Norway. But it was in very poor health and suffering greatly. After several unsuccessful attempts to coax it back out to sea, and once it was certain that there was no way that it could possibly recover, the difficult decision was made to put the poor creature out of its misery.
Well, the interesting thing is that this wasn't the first whale that ever came to our shores. This happens every other year, maybe perhaps with an Olympic interval, but this time was the first time that such a magnificent creature, which they are, and which people come to Norway to see, after all, as tourists. It was the first time a whale came here, and it became apparent that we killed it, actually. It came here, and it came into a small little beach just outside Bergen, and very publicly was put down with a rifle in front of a lot of people. And as soon as we opened it, we saw that we had murdered it with plastic. It was so full in its stomach that it had just choked on plastic. And there's no way around this. We killed this poor creature. Magnificent sea creature that should be there to sort of remind us of the excellence of nature, and now had to be put down, go outside an oil refinery, funnily enough. This, of course, caused an outcry, not only in Norway, but in the world, as the media attention would show later.
With so much undigestible plastic clogging its digestive tract, the whale had little room left for food. It was slowly, painfully starving to death when it ran aground. It could not have survived. As news of the grim discovery spread, the world's media descended on Bergen, eager to learn more.
Ja, hallo, det er NRK.
Helge Sufteland is a producer with Norway's national broadcasting service, NRK.
When this first surfaced, of course, it was a huge media race to sort of see the whale while it still was alive. And then when it was put down with a rifle in the middle of a little village on Sotra, then, of course, it was a very visual, graphic thing. And when everyone was trying to figure out what to do with it, drag it off to sea and sink it, or put it up in the museum for a display, as it eventually turned out, people came from all over the world as soon as we discovered the plastic. Because this was a world story in 2 days, because no one had ever seen anything like this before. And we had Sky News, we had CNN, we had people coming from all over the world to witness this, because it was the first time, I think, that we were so easily visualized what we have done to nature.
Laid out on a laboratory floor, the astonishing contents of a whale's stomach, 30 bags and other pieces of plastic that had clogged its digestive system, some of it food packaging, almost certainly from the UK, the discarded remains of someone's shopping. Thomas Moore, Sky News.
The last time I did a show on plastic in the oceans, I was damn near crying myself. As a journalist, I'm supposed to be an objective guy who just stand there and find facts and let the public decide. But this time I was angry. I was outraged when I saw this, because it's such a massive problem. And I just want people to realize how we have to change our planet. And I mean, I should be a reporter just reporting, but now I see a need for change. And I want to make stories that make people react, make people think. But do we see it? Perhaps. Perhaps this is sort of the embers that will end with a huge fiery outcry to sort of make that change that the world needs to get rid of this enormous problem.
It takes dedicated people, such as Helge, to ensure that we don't forget the message carried to us by this whale.
My name is Tarje Lislevan.
On his Twitter page, Tarje Lislevan describes himself as an associate professor at the University of Bergen, an ornithologist, zoologist, and a museum man.
So where I'm taking you now is into an exhibition, which we've called the Plastic Whale, which is shown here at the University Museum of Bergen in Western Norway. And all of these plastic bags that you see here hanging from the ceiling, there are more than 40 of them. Some of them are colored, some of them are not. So you have some bluish, some greenish ones here. And all of these plastic items were found inside the stomach of a cuvier beaked whale, which stranded at Sotra in Western Norway in February this year.
On a recent visit to Bergen, Dr. Richard Collins paid a visit to the museum to see for himself just how much plastic was inside this whale.
On our right here, Terje, there's this big batch of things. It looks like it's square or rectangular in shape. It's about a metre off the ground by about a metre and a half by a metre. Now, it seems to consist of plastics. Were all the things in that block taken out of the Cuvier beaked whale?
No, it wasn't. This is what it looks like when you recycle plastic. Huh. All of this plastic which was inside the stomach of the whale should actually have been in a cube like that. So instead of recycling all the plastic, we have thrown away a lot of plastic items out in nature, and then in the end they ended up in the sea and were mixed up with food for this poor animal.
Now, can I take you back to the day the whale turned up? Describe what happened, could you?
Yes, we heard through the newspapers, this was a Saturday, that a whale had stranded at Sotra. And we didn't know then what it was, which species it was. It wasn't so easy to see from pictures in the newspapers. But I decided to go out there and check the day after. And after a little discussion with my colleagues from all over the country, we found out that this was actually a cuvier beaked whale, which has never been recorded in Norway before. And at the University Museum, we have a large exhibition of large and small whale skeletons. So since this animal, Sotra, already was dead, we decided that since it was such a rare species in Norway, we decided that we needed to take it into the museum and secure the skeleton.
Now, you have a picture of it on the wall here. It's very big. Is that a life-size picture? Would you say how long it is and how heavy this beast was?
Yes, it was 6 meters long, which is, of course, you find a lot of bigger whales, but for this species, it's about a meter shorter than the, or 1.5 meter shorter than the longest cuvier-beaked whales. So this was actually a young male. And you can also see that it was a young one because adults have two teeth in the lower jaw that comes out in the tip of the lower jaw. And this animal didn't have that, so they hadn't come out yet.
So now this is a strange animal for this part of the world. We have them stranded in Ireland fairly frequently. I think Ireland is the place where most strandings of Cuvier's beak whale have occurred. But in Norway, it's a very rare beast, isn't it?
It is. And actually, I think this is one of the most common whales to find stranded. But normally these animals live in warmer waters. They thrive much better in the warmer parts of the oceans. So you don't find them in the northernmost parts and in the southernmost parts.
Mm-hmm. And they're very deep diving whale. They like it down below, and you don't come to the surface all that much. So people hardly ever see them, I gather.
Yeah, that's right. You hardly see them. And of course, with this particular animal, since it was ill at the time, it came close to land, and therefore it was possible to examine it quite well. So it was possible also to see which species it was. These animals, the toothed whales, are not always so easy to recognize when they are swimming in the sea. And as you say, they are very often found deep below the surface as well, so you can't see them at all.
Although Tarje and his team were curious to know what had caused this magnificent, mysterious denizen of the deep to come ashore, there was no plan to carry out a post-mortem.
Yeah, we didn't have much time to plan this because everything happened so quickly. The animal was lying there on the beach at Sotra, and people were planning actually to haul the beast out to open sea and sink it. So we asked them to hold on for a while and just wait so that we could have time to move the animal to a better place for slaughtering and to secure the skeleton. And then we also had one researcher with us who was very interested in looking inside the stomach because he's an expert of squid. Mm. And he knew that these animals, they eat squid. So he was very keen at looking at the stomach contents. And that was not a very pleasant thing to do because at the moment you open, you cut through the stomach, there is a lot of gas coming out and it's really smelly. But this squid researcher, he insisted to open it, and that was when they found out what was inside it.
So now you opened up the stomach and you've got all this plastic tumbling out, a huge quantity of it. And this was a complete surprise, was it?
It wasn't that surprising because we knew about these things. We knew that many marine mammals have problems with plastic waste. Mm. They eat it, get it into their stomach, and or they could even get entangled in you know, fishing nets and plastic. But of course, it was a very sad sight to see because the whole stomach was, you know, like a big ball of plastic. It looked like a big ball. The more we picked out, the more there was. You know, it never stopped. Mm. So more than 40 pieces of quite large plastic bags and plastic sheets were found inside this stomach. So we thought that it would be interesting then to show, not only on pictures and on films or videos of it, but actually let people in Bergen at least give them the possibility to come here and see the amount of plastic and what the plastic looked like. The museum actually had a record visitor number this summer due to the exhibition here. Mm-hmm. The finding of the whale caused a lot of attention from the media and from the public. Many people have been out there cleaning the beaches, you know, and picking plastic from the sea and from the beaches. And there has been a lot of discussion, at least in Norway, about this problem of marine plastic pollution. Politicians have been interested in this. They have provided a lot of money to clean the beaches and so on. So, and even researchers say that it's easier for them to get attention now to do some research on this problem, plastic pollution in the oceans.
My name is Kenneth Bruvik, and I'm working for the Hunting and Fishing Association in Norway. And 20 years ago, I created a project that we would take the children out from school that have problems and struggling with maybe their homes and also at school, out in the wilderness and doing activities in the wilderness. That's my job.
Kenneth Bruvik is another individual who's been inspired by the tragic loss of this Cuvier's beaked whale. He's now on a mission to clear all of the waste plastic from Norway's coastline.
I think when a whale comes to our coast, it wakes us up and we started to look for plastic in our environment, and then we get shocked. Because when you sit home in your house and you don't see the problem, you don't care. But when you go out and see the problem, it hits you in your heart. And it's heartbreaking. Now when I tell this to you, I want to cry. I'm ashamed how we treat the nature. The nature give us so many fine times when we are enjoying the nature. And when you see here what we give the nature, I'm so ashamed. And I just want to cry.
The Norwegian coastline stretches for some 25,000 kilometers. And Kenneth is very much aware of the task that faces him, as he explained to Richard Collins when he took him to the first of two beaches he's attempting to clear.
Just be careful, Richard, because it's very slippy here.
Yes, it's a very tricky place and very slippy, and that water is icy cold. I wouldn't like to go into that now.
Yeah, now I have taken you to a place where we haven't cleaned up. This is how it is in many beaches in Norway. There's a lot of plastic here, so I want to show you how big the problem is.
It's quite a shock. Now, we've been going along a pristine coastline of fjords and mini-fjords and fjords off fjords, and in one of these little fjords with rocks all around us stretching into the countryside, there's a vast amount of debris, fishing stuff, old boxes for fish, lobster pot remains, ropes, nets, bottles, all kinds of sundry items, and a round spherical thing that looks like a Second World War mine, which I hope it isn't. Anyway, but it's quite a shock to come along and see all these pristine little coves, and suddenly this one full of junk of all kinds. How does it happen that you have all this stuff in this little bay?
Yeah, that's because we have the sea currents. And when the storm is coming and the sea currents is bringing the plastic, it's find their way, and they find some, I call it red spots, where we have this big length of plastic going into small bays and beaches.
How common are these kind of traps?
Very common.
Very.
Yeah, we find thousands of them in the whole coast.
Now, you have an enormous coastline. I mean, it's tens of thousands of kilometres, depending on how you measure it. It's huge. It's gigantic. Stretches from Russia up at the top right down to Thames waters. Now, how many Norwegians are there? A couple of million? What is it? 5 million or something like that? Now, do 5 million Norwegians produce enough waste to fill all these little coves all along that coast?
No, I don't think so.
Where's it coming from then?
Most of the fishery garbage is from the fisheries. And I don't know if it's Norwegian fishery or it's a foreign fishery from England, from Russia, from Portugal, from... I don't know. But I'm going to show you what is happening with the plastic when it has been laying in there 50 years. So it's very soft and it's really crushed.
Plastic is immortal, they say. Yeah. It will be there forever, sort of thing. Now, I'd like you to describe what you think will happen to this plastic in time.
I am afraid that this plastic will end up in the food chain. Mm. And that's the biggest problem here. Because when the plastic get into the food chain, we get a big problem.
Now, how does it get in? These are big bottles and junk balls, like huge sheets and things.
Not these big bottles, because I will show you the next bay. I will show the in a very better way, because under this top layer of plastic, we have macroplastic, smaller pieces. And then under that again, you have microplastic. And then under that layer again, you have nanoplastic. And the nanoplastic is going into the food chain, down again in the sea and into fishes and all the marine lives. And then it ends up in our bodies.
My God, yes. Nanoplastic, 1 millionth of a millionth of a millimetre is a nanometer. It's so small, it's inconceivable. Even an electron microscope would have difficulty seeing it. Yet these are getting into the shellfish and from the shellfish into the larger fish and from that into us. Yeah. And God knows what that's going to do to us over decades.
It will scare a hell of us, because this will be a big problem in the future. And I think about the people and the children that's not born. They will have the problem, and we have a big responsibility.
Well, now, how are you going to tackle this mess behind us? What are you going to do with it? I mean, these cliffs around us are too high. How can you get in with a truck or anything to remove it, or can you?
We need cranes and helicopters, and we need excavators, and we have to dig up this plastic and soil and stones and sand, and we have to remove it.
And you're going to do that?
We are going to do it, I can assure you. You see how you have all sort of types of plastic. You have fishery ports. So you see, this one is from UK, and the telephone number is there, you see?
Mm-hmm, my God, it's come all the way from the... It's kind of a fish box, bright yellow thing, quite big, and it's one of many that are here, and it has a website and a telephone number on the side of it. Yeah. Yes, my God, this could be a museum of plastic, certainly plastic debris. There's all kinds of household appliances. You find yourself wondering, what was that? Yes, that's off a vacuum cleaner. Oh, no, that's a bin. That's somebody's bin.
It's crazy. And if you see, when you in your down here with your... You see here, this plastic here. Ooh. It's break up in pieces, you see? This is old one.
It's already fragmenting. How old would you make that pen?
20, 30 years. And if you start to dig down here, you will find that this...
Yes, brittle.
And then the plastic goes from the sea and up 50 meters with plastic.
It's a dreadful sight. It really is depressing.
But now, Richard, I'm going to show you a beach called Nightmare Beach. And I'm going to show you, we have cleaned it up. And I'm going to show you how much plastic there is coming back. Mm. And also the biggest problem, I think, that what we find under the plastic.
Of course.
Okay?
Show us. I'm not looking forward to it, but...
We all bear responsibility for the problem. The world's oceans are filling with plastic, with at least 8 million tons of this persistent, pervasive substance dumped into it every year. That's equivalent to one garbage truckload of plastic per minute. Our convenience lifestyle and cavalier attitude to waste disposal is at fault.
We've left the boat and we've climbed up a bit and we're in a valley, a sort of a little valley, sloping, beautifully covered with heathers. I find juniper everywhere, beautiful juniper forest, some lovely mosses, ferns, all kinds of things, and then the bare rock, of course, covered in colourful lichen. It is really it's an idyllic kind of place. It was probably like this thousands of years ago, before humans even arrived. You're going back into the pristine wilderness of long ago. It is a beautiful place, I must say, and so peaceful, so calm, not a sound, no planes flying over even, it's wonderful. Right now, coming down out of this lovely pristine area, lots of sphagnum under my feet, what looks like sphagnums of rushes, and then a lone Norway spruce tree standing guard here. How very appropriate, considering where we are. But now I'm coming down into what Ken called Nightmare Beach, although he uses the word beach in a way we wouldn't use it. It's more a bay to us, a bay strewn with boulders, narrow, jutting up into the hill, shall we say. I'm going to stop here for a minute now, because 30 metres or so ahead of me, Kenneth is being interviewed about this problem of debris on beaches and in along the coast, which is not just a Norwegian problem, though it's very acute here in Norway. It's a universal problem, which is everywhere now. And he's discussing that. I think you can probably hear them rolling the stuff over there. They're lifting up boxes and things. Yes, this has been cleaned up to some extent, but you'd know it had once a lot of debris. The very big items, like a giant tractor tire, is still there, and there are huge big beams, which would be almost impossible to move, got them washed up by the sea. It would take another ocean to get them out of here. But it is much better than the last place we were in, which was very, very dirty indeed. There's the remains here, but it's getting back to the pristine state it was in long ago.
Og tok opp altså 40 000 liter med plast fra denne lille vika her. When I saw this beach, because there was 40,000 liter of plastic here in the first time, and when I saw it, my tears were just falling, and I saw my grandson coming with his hand in my hand, and then you feel the anger and you feel the energy for... We have to stop this madness. We have to stop it. And just around here, 5 meters away here, there is an otter family. Mm. There was an otter family. They are gone. Oh, they were living in this plastic nightmare. Mm. And that's crazy. Now you see these boxes here? You have a telephone number. Can you see where it come from? I think it's...
Well, there is a telephone number there. It looks like...
That's a UK number, 01779.
But this one, and this
Say
also
again,
UK?
That's a UK Same number again. Also, yeah.
You came here first when, and you saw it covered in debris?
I just saw it 1 week after the whale stranded in Bergen.
So since February, you have organised this huge operation. It is an extraordinary feat. Now, how did you go about that? How did you get the money together, the people together, logistics?
You know, when the whale hit us, we saw that, and I think we were shocked. Mm-hmm. And then I took all my energy, all the energy into it, and tried to get more people with me. And then we started this big operation in Norway, and it's have just been bigger and bigger. We have taken up 500 ton of plastic just from February to now.
Now, this particular bay, how many people did you organize to come here, and how long did they take to remove everything?
This particular bay here were about 40 people, 5 hours, and then they have picked up. But just the plastic in the top of it, mm-hmm. up of the bay. So we need also excavators here to go under and take the rest of it.
Suppose I was a volunteer, and I mean, you're here organizing me to help with this. Now, what would you ask me to do? I mean, there's all this plastic everywhere. What would you tell me to do?
We have some big bags, 1,000 liter of each bag, and we filled up 40 of them.
So I would go around, I would pick up boxes like these, bottles like those, junk of all kinds, plastic and everything else.
Yeah, but bigger items like that tire there. Bigger items, we just use the helicopter.
Now, you take your plastic bags and you took them in the boat. Where do you bring them and what happened?
To the garbage company.
Yeah.
And then they were burned.
Burned.
Burned, everything.
No. Nothing recycled or...
No, not at
that. Like that.
No.
I see. Now, who provided you with a helicopter? That's expensive.
And they were... The government were helping me with money. Mm. They understand that when we started this operation, they have to give me what we need.
Indeed.
We need a helicopter because we have to remove it and then we must have it.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm going to show you under your foot here, there is macroplastic.
Yes.
A meter down.
Macro, yes, that would be centimeter size, yes.
Yeah.
Fragments.
And under it, we have microplastic.
That'd be millimeter and smaller.
Yes. And under there again, you have nanoplastic.
We couldn't even see that. That is small.
And what's frightening is that 10 meters away, the food chain is.
Ah, yes, there's fish down there.
There is fish.
And there were otters, you say?
Yeah.
Yes.
All marine lives are living there.
Yes.
And it's ended up in us.
Yes, and
that's frightening.
Mm.
I can show you here with a spade. You see, we have to dig up and we have to remove all this stuff. You see all these small pieces?
Oh, look at that fragment. Look at that. That's quite a nasty fragment, isn't it? And it's down, 6 inches, a couple of centimeters down on the ground? Yeah, absolutely.
So everything here, and I think that this soil have to be burned. All the plastic away, and then we can take the soil back again.
Oh, you would bring it back, would you?
Yeah.
Another helicopter needed for that? No,
yeah.
My God.
This is a big job.
It is a big job, indeed. It is a big job, yes. And how long would you think it would take you to really clean this place up properly, this particular bay? 100 metres by 30, 40 metres?
This bay, 1 week we have fixed this bay, I hope.
And is it in hands? Are you going to do this?
We are going to do it.
When will that be, do you think?
In April, we will have a big cleanup here with people coming all over the world. And at the same time, give a big message to their countries and their governments that we have to work together to solve this problem. Because if we can unite every land on the planet, we can do something about it.
We have to.
We have so many bottles from the UK, from Scotland, and maybe from your land also.
You're very discreet, but I'm sure there's plenty from our
Yes, but there is so many bottles coming. And I think that if you can get some recycle on your bottles and get maybe you get paid to delivering the bottles in again, you can be paid, the bottles will stop. You take this one, this boxes here from the fisheries, if you get 50 pound or 100 krona for this in recycle, it will have a value.
It will indeed.
Because now it's not having a value.
Exactly.
And there is no one owns it.
Yes.
No one just owns it.
Yes.
But if this case have a value, many want to own it. From now on, we have to work together and solve this problem.
Plastic is the term given to a wide range of synthetic or semi-synthetic organic compounds that can easily be shaped and moulded into solid objects. Most are made from petrochemical byproducts and consist of very long molecules known as polymers. Commercial plastic production began in 1907, following the invention of Bakelite, the world's first synthetic plastic. Very quickly, the supreme durability, low cost and lightweight of these new wonder materials, as well as their waterproof and insulating properties, led to their rapid adoption in many industries. The result was a technological revolution. These new materials utterly changed our lives and the way we live them in every corner of the planet. For manufacturers and consumers alike, plastic was a dream material. But that dream has become a global nightmare. We now truly live in the plastic age. And alongside the technological advances and convenience it has brought us, we have now developed a shameful throwaway culture. Plastic is seen as disposable and is now quite literally everywhere. And it simply doesn't go away. A single plastic bottle will remain intact for over 100 years without decomposing. Other plastics will persist for more than a millennium, buried in landfill sites, clogging our rivers, or polluting our beaches. And we are producing more and more of it, around 300 million tons per year and rising.
So we have had a long-standing program on marine litter, or plastic marine pollution in the oceans. And this year, the UN Environment Assembly, which is a meeting, which is a global meeting where all the ministers from the countries all over the world get together for take strong actions on specific topic. And this year, the theme of this meeting was pollution, to beat pollution worldwide. In particular, we had a strong commitment, what we called resolution, on marine litter and microplastic in the ocean to really target this tremendous problem. We know that 8 million tons of plastic enter into the ocean every year, which is almost one garbage truck of trash into the ocean every minute. So we just desperately need to act on this issue. And the ministerial meeting that we had in Nairobi was a first step to really get a collective action. We had a strong agreement that we need to work on this issue collectively.
Dr. Emilia Lisa Svensson is the Global Director for Ocean with the United Nations, heading up the Marine and Coastal Ecosystems Work Programme.
And now, of course, comes what do we go from here? How do we take this work forward? And that would need to be discussed with government But we are not waiting only for all governments to come aboard. We are really teaming partnership, closer collaboration with key countries and leaders, including the private sector, which is a very essential part to clean up the beaches or to reduce the marine plastic into the ocean at the first place, to find those solutions. So we're working both with governments and the private sector, as well, of course, the whole civil society to bring awareness, education, outreach, to also inform about this tremendous problem. Because I think also, as we have seen a lot of plastic. We see pictures, we've seen movies. There is a lot of agreement that this is not a problem which is naturally.
Lisa's commitment to cleaning the oceans comes from personal experience.
No, I'm personally very concerned and engaged, of course, to reduce and find solutions to this problem. Absolutely. And if you have seen, not only on beaches, but also have you seen the effects of plastic coming into the animals, could be anything from turtles, whales, dolphins, and you see how the reaction into those animals for a problem that we as mankind has produced, it's not the animals in itself. We also definitely need to find this solution. And we went to the coast of Kenya, and we're visiting a turtle hospital, and we just saw how turtles has been both eating plastic but also got stuck in plastic, old fishing gear, lost and discharges fishing gear. And many of them, of course, dies because they cannot eat. They cannot digest this microplastic or plastic that they take that as food. For example, it looks like jellyfish, the plastic bags. And some of them, the local communities, collect the turtles and help them to get that through the system. And then they let these turtles out in the oceans again. And obviously, when that turtle comes out in the ocean, is a tremendous relief to see we can save it, we can really do something about it. But then the next question that comes is, of course, how do we make sure that those animals doesn't come back again? Because the problem is obviously there. But there is two points with this story, and that is the plastic on those beaches that those turtles and animals eat comes from all over the world. This was on the coast of Africa, and the plastic that we find, it was from all over the world with different texts and languages. And obviously, it could have come from a ship just outside the coast, but most likely it has come with the currents. So you might find solutions locally, but the problem is so global. So you have to stop the pollutants where it comes from, so at its source in that sense. And the second point is that in this particular case in Kenya, the local community has really got engaged, of course, to help the turtles themselves, but also to do a lot of cleanups on the beaches so they can have tourists coming to the beach. And also, obviously, the tourists come to the beach and they contribute to the local society in terms of economic benefits for local handcraft, etc. And the local community see this in the linkages between polluted beaches and lack of tourism. So this is why how they feel engaged. And the challenge is, how do we, from a UN perspective, see these local communities and the local solutions and scale them up to very global processes? How do we work with governments to take strong actions? And that could be really different depending on what region we talk to or what nation. It might work with a ban on microplastic, single-use plastic, microbeads in cosmetics, for example. That might be one path. Taxes, incentives to change. There's a lot of different options out there. And this needs to be applied globally. And this is what we're trying to do while forming partnership with plastic industry. They need to be part of that solution, finding new design for products. And also, of course, another element in this is waste management, sewage treatment. So really stopping the problem at its source before it comes into the ocean.
By the year 2030, that one garbage truck load per minute entering our seas will have become two. And by 2050, it will be four. At that point, the weight of the plastic in our oceans will exceed the weight of fish.
Derek, I mean, we all know about statistics of the impacts of marine plastics and plastics in the marine environment, and these shocking, absolutely shocking statistics. And currently there's 5 trillion pieces of plastics afloat in the ocean, from the deep water zones to the surface waters to offshore islands to inshore islands to our own beaches in Ireland and the beaches across the globe. This plastic pollution problem is so important to get your head around, because basically at this point in time in certain areas of the world, there's more plastic in the sea than there is fish. There has to be a way to deal with this, and this is why I'm very keen on looking at solutions and innovation ways to deal with this.
Rowan Byrne is the principal marine scientist for global engineering consultants Mott MacDonald.
I work with Mott MacDonald, who are an engineering company, in helping them to sort of mitigate any circumstances or impacts on the marine environment from a professional marine capacity. But my background is very much having travelled the world and worked with sea turtles, sharks, dugongs, marine habitats around the world, the migratory patterns of sea turtles to tagging of sharks in Australia to wherever it was, to working in the Philippines. But I'm an academic researcher who's very much in the consultancy realm, and yeah, I'm very driven about the marine environment, and this is where it fits in with Mott MacDonald.
Rowan believes that ocean plastics is the next big environmental issue for business. So in June 2017, he invited interested parties to attend a conference in Cambridge where they could discuss solutions.
One of the things that came on with Eric was the influence of wet wipes in the marine environment and the influence they have on how they cause spills. When they're flushed down toilets, they cause fatbergs. Now, a fatberg is basically, as it sounds, a big lump of fat that blocks up a sewer, and it can be made of dense fat, dental floss, wet wipes, even nappies, and it basically blocks up the sewage system. So I had a look at this. I was thinking, well, how can we stop this? One of the things is we could probably stop people flushing things down the toilet that weren't poo, paper or pee. That would be a great help. But the other thing is, how quickly do wet wipes break down in the marine environment? It's not like two-ply toilet tissue that would naturally break down in the water. These wet wipes are made of polyester plastic fibres. And plastic in the marine environment, as you can see the connection, is a big polluter. But having wet wipes that go in there, if they make it past the fatbergs, past the sewage system, are a big contributor to environmental spills and environmental damage in the marine environment. So I spoke to many of our clients, and I spoke to one company called Jackson Rees Wet Wipes in Derry, and they make a wet wipe that isn't plastic based. It has a large content of cellulose. Now, people might say, what the hell is cellulose? Cellulose is basically wood fibers, and wood breaks down an awful lot quicker in the marine environment. It biodegrades faster than plastic. So I began to look at the source of the problem. And through discussions with our clients, discussions with manufacturers, discussions with water companies, is there a way that we can look at how quickly these cellulose wet wipes, non-plastic, break down in the marine environment? And there is. There's a lot of academic institutions in the UK, some of them very much pioneering, especially the University of Plymouth. And I contacted them and I said, look, we have a wet wipes. Is there any chance you could look at investigating how quickly these break down? Now, if we discover it breaks down quicker, there'll be a number of advantages. The whole evidence is less residency time in the ocean, meaning that it would break down, essentially dissolve into tiny, tiny particles that would eventually evaporate over the period of time if we find this out. But we can definitely say that natural fibres, of which these are made of, would biodegrade faster than polyester plastic-based, hard-wearing, long-time residency plastic compounds that you'll find in wet wipes. So we've started the ball rolling on to do some very pioneering research with a very esteemed university. And this is just one example of the positive solutions that came out of the conference last June that every, to be honest with you, every mother and child and household can make a difference on, because we all can make a difference by just simple, reusable and non-continual usage of disposable plastics.
Nowhere on Earth seems able to avoid the scourge of plastic contamination. Even the most remote islands, far from human civilization, are suffering the effects of our rampant consumer culture and the irresponsible use and disposal of plastics.
Plastics are having a bigger and bigger impact on seabirds around the world, but also here in Ireland. It's not just a problem that we're finding in the Pacific Ocean, where you have the famous big giant garbage patch of plastic floating there. We're finding increasingly on the Irish coast, almost every seabird that we find dead on a beach has some plastic in its intestines or in its stomach. It's not necessarily the cause of death in every case, but they have a large load of plastic in them. And we are seeing more birds dying from it too. The more plastic that they swallow, the more it blocks up their stomach, the more it means that they can't digest food and they literally starve to death even though their stomachs are full. We don't know, they may not even feel hungry because the plastic is in there. It's having a big effect, and very often you can see this yourself. If you're walking on a beach anywhere in Ireland and you find a dead gull or a dead cormorant, if you look closely, if it's decomposed anyway, there's often just full of plastic all inside the skeleton. And that's little beads of plastic, little particles that these birds have consumed when they're out at sea. Maybe they've eaten them directly, or maybe they've eaten a fish that had eaten them. It doesn't really matter. It still gets into the food chain. It shows how pervasive and persistent this plastic is. The acids in these birds' and fish's stomachs, they don't digest it or break it down. It just almost there forever, and it's a big problem. And what we see as well in the oceans too is that sometimes big lumps of plastic go in and then degrade and break down to smaller pieces and smaller fragments. Those fragments can stay in there for millennia, and it's becoming an enormous problem. You know, they're saying that by the year 2050 there'll be more plastic in the sea by weight than fish, and it's absolutely horrendous. Something really has to be done.
So whales are not the only creatures that are being severely harmed by the huge quantities of plastic that have entered our marine ecosystem. A vast range of mollusks, crustaceans, fish, turtles and birds are also suffering due to our folly, greed and neglect. Niall Hatch of Birdwatch Ireland is extremely concerned about the effects of plastic on marine life and has been seeing the problem growing.
I saw some really shocking statistics recently about just the level of plastic bottles for mainly for drinking water. That's the main culprit here. Around the globe, every second, there are 20,000 new plastic drinking bottles produced. So if you add up to do the maths on it, every minute, that's 1.2 million plastic bottles. That's half a trillion a year. Less than 7% of that is actually recycled. So a lot of it ends up in landfills, but a huge amount ends up in the oceans. And it's absolutely mind-boggling. We're seeing particularly a big problem with plastic bags. That's become a huge problem in the oceans as well. A lot of the birds that would feed on squid, for example, or would feed on jellyfish, they see these plastic bags floating in the water. They think it's food. They swallow it. And that those plastic bags, they just don't decompose inside their bodies. They stay in there, they clog them up very, very badly. It's a serious problem, and it's getting worse and worse. And a lot of this plastic is generated in Ireland, but also because we're at the mercy of the ocean currents, we're seeing a lot of this plastic coming from all over the world, particularly on the south coast. And look at all the different plastic bottles and bags and boxes that are washed up. So look at all the languages on them. There's plenty there that come from Ireland and from the UK. Lots of French writing, lots of Spanish writing particularly. You even sometimes see Arabic writing on them. And they're travelling in the ocean's currents. And just travelling around the globe. And this is a problem because a lot of this plastic floats. It doesn't just sink to the bottom of the ocean and it doesn't break down. It'll be there for centuries to come. The sheer volume of that is being produced is absolutely staggering.
This all sounds terrible and horrendous and shocking and all that. But most people simply don't seem to care about a dead bird found on a beach. There is never a media storm around that, unlike the demise of a massive whale. But both kinds of incident represent just the tip of the iceberg.
We started wanting to investigate if seabirds in Ireland were ingesting plastics as well. And in order to get samples in the whole country, we asked people if they do come across a beach bird to let us know to report or to collect them if they will. And then we can investigate their stomach contents to see if they are being affected by plastic pollution.
Heidi Acampora, a PhD candidate at the Galway Mayo Institute of Technology, has been examining the infiltration of marine food chains by plastic litter, as well as the dire consequences for the marine animals that are unfortunate enough to consume it. Her research is shining a light on this huge threat to our planet's most important ecosystem.
So far, we got about 250 carcasses of 20 different species. So we followed the whole protocol to look at each part of the body of the seabird and try to see why it has been killed.
One of the bird species, which appears to have been hit especially hard by the abundance of plastic around the Irish coast, is the fulmar. Fulmars are highly pelagic birds, meaning that they prefer to live and forage over the open ocean. Food can be scarce in such an environment, so fulmars tend to grab and swallow any potential food item as soon as they spot them. All too often these days, such items turn out not to be food at all, but rather plastic debris.
Well, fulmars, they are opportunistic feeders, so they feed on pretty much anything they find. And I think the reason why they ingest so much plastics is because they think it's food, they think it's prey. So they also are surface feeders, so they feed on anything at the surface of the water. Plastics is normally buoyant. It's overlapping where they would find prey, there's plastics. So in Ireland so far, we have found that at least 93% of the fulmars that we sampled ingested plastics. Actually, only one of the specimens that we collected didn't have plastics.
But that means 93% of the fulmars turning up dead have plastics. It doesn't mean that 93% of the fulmars out there have plastics, because you're biasing your sample a bit. Have you any idea to what extent fulmars in general are victims of plastic?
Exactly. So we can only say about what we found so far. Obviously, there might be a lot of fulmars that are alive
and they have plastics in their stomachs. So what happens to foamers is that they don't have the ability to regurgitate really well. They can, but it's not very easy for them. On the contrary, for other birds that they can just excrete these and regurgitate, foamers actually just accumulate these plastics. So for them, the case is that they have more because they accumulate them. What we see throughout the data in the whole world so far where foamers are present is that it is very high. That's why they were chosen to be the ones to be used for monitoring, because they are the ones ingesting and accumulating plastics. So, for example, a foamer has a very, very small stomach, so it will likely to be full really quickly. And then if the bird is ingesting all these plastics and is not ingesting any proper food, or it doesn't actually have space for proper food, it's not getting any nutrition. So it's very likely the bird will die from starvation really quickly and nothing else.
Even without plastic pollution, oceanic life is already suffering greatly from human activity. Overfishing has disrupted global food chains. Climate change is causing currents to shift and sea temperatures to rise, killing coral reefs and gradually changing the distribution of plankton, and therefore all the marine life that feeds on it. Noise pollution from commercial shipping, sonar technology, and military exercises are disrupting fish, and even causing the sensitive eardrums of whales and dolphins to burst. The straw that finally breaks the camel's back might well be a plastic one.
So in recent years, there's been a great interest in plastics, especially more recently microplastics. And this is actually driven by the Marine Strategic Framework Directive. So we have a legal obligation in Ireland now to quantify the effects of marine debris on our wildlife and our oceans. So as part of that, myself and colleagues from GMIT and UCC, we looked at all the animals that we'd done postmortems on since 1995, since we started this work, and looked to see how often do we find macroplastic, that's big plastic, in the stomachs of a whole range of species. 530 animals we looked at over that period, and 8.5% of them had plastic in their stomachs or their intestines. So this is the biggest study ever carried out anywhere in the world, because we have such a long data looking back over the years. And because there's a big interest now in microplastics, which are defined as plastics less than 5 millimeters in size, so they're really small bits, we looked at 21 individuals from beaked whales to porpoises to dolphins and baleen whales, and found that we had microplastics in every single individual that we examined, and in all compartments of their stomach and all their compartments of the intestines. So microplastics are everywhere in every species. And the macroplastics, the big lumps, were found in 8.5%, which actually was much higher incident of plastics in any other study worldwide, which is a bit worrying. And we're thinking like, well, why would Ireland have such a big problem with plastics? And I think it's not that we have a bigger problem than other parts of the Atlantic or the world. It's just that this is the most intensive study ever carried out.
Dr. Simon Barrow is Chief Scientific Officer with the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group.
Of all the animals we looked at, none of them showed any signs that the cause of death was caused by the plastic. It was incidental. But I think obviously in some species, you get compaction of the gut, where you actually your gut is blocked with plastics. That can lead to death. In seabird species, you know, your actual stomach is full of plastics and you starve to death. I mean, maybe the Bergen whale that was so full of plastics, its cause of death, it was euthanized, but it was emaciated. It had no blood reserves left. It was starving to death. Now, some of that is the fact that it's off Norway and there isn't deep water off Norway. Remember, these animals live in at least 2,500 meters of water. So this whale could have been sick for a while, might not have been foraging, hasn't been feeding, starving to death, wanders into the North Sea, life strands in Norway. And why was it starving to death? Because its stomach was full of plastics.
Time is running out. If we are to reverse the plastic problem and ensure a future for our marine environment, we need to act now. We need to reconsider how we live our lives, recognise the true cost of our convenience culture, and understand that plastic has started to enter the human food chain too. Plastic pollution is now having direct consequences on our own health and well-being. Our innate selfishness as a species needs to stop. The picture is much bigger than merely mankind. All life on Earth, including our own ancestors, came from the oceans. The fight against plastic should not simply be a question of trying to conserve wildlife for future generations. It should be fought for the sake of the ocean dwellers themselves. Like the great whales, who were here long before we arrived on the scene, and who by rights should still be here long after we are gone. How tragic it would be if the only thing that survives us on Earth is our waste. Meters. 1,000 meters.
The Bergen Whale was presented and produced by Derek Mooney.
Follow us on Facebook, RTE Nature.
Mooney Goes Wild on RTE Radio 1.